again. We're coming to you from the trenches. I'm Rita Sand. You're listening to an anti-war demonstration outside of U.S. Congressman Rahm Emanuel's office on Irving Park Road in Chicago. We'll listen to Cindy Sheehan's talk at the protest, and we'll introduce you to a new documentary on the lingering questions about the 9/11 attack. Those stories and more, but first, we'll look at a new law in Illinois designed to roll back mercury exposure. Stay tuned. On January 1st, Illinois enacted landmark legislation that limits the amount of mercury in all vaccines administered in the state. At least, that was the intent of the legislation. But on the very same day, the Illinois Department of Public Health declared four vaccines exempt from the law: the flu vaccine, the diphtheria tetanus, the meningitis, and the Japanese encephalitis vaccines all have higher levels of mercury than the 1.25 micrograms now allowed. The flu vaccine contains a whopping 25 micrograms of mercury, 20 times higher than permitted by law. While the Illinois Department of Public Health, or IDPH, says thimerosal, the preservative in vaccines that contains mercury, is safe, some health professionals and mothers of autistic children are shocked that despite the new law, these vaccines are legally laced with mercury. Teresa Conrick is one of those moms. Conrick lives in Elmwood Park with her two daughters, Megan and Mary.
And this was Megan the first Christmas, and this was Megan at the hospital, probably right after she had her first hepatitis B shot with thimerosal. And this is Mary, yes.
Me.
And that's Mary, her first Christmas.
Wait, is that me?
That's you. These are all Mary.
This is me?
That's you. And that's a big Mary.
Yeah,
it was Mary.
Although both preteen girls have a slender build and silky red hair, mentally and emotionally, they are very different. 10-year-old Mary can laugh at herself in her baby pictures, but her 12-year-old sister Megan has trouble expressing herself at all. Megan, who has been nonverbal since the age of two, uses a device to speak for her.
Here, Meg, sweet pea. Tell mommy what you want to eat for dinner.
I want.
What would you like, babes?
I want more. I want candy cane.
You want candy cane? Maybe not for dinner, but maybe later. How about a cookie?
Lying in her bed with only the top half of her body clothed, Megan watches TV. Her ears are covered with what looks like headphones. They're really noise protectors that soften normal sounds that Megan finds uncomfortably loud. Conrick questions the role of several different factors that might have led to Megan's autism. Was it because Megan received the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine at the same time as the thimerosal-containing vaccine? She received a vaccine that's no longer on the market, while Mary did not. And she was on antibiotics for ear infections at the time she received some vaccines. Could that have played a part? Despite the many variables, Conrick is convinced that mercury was the overall major culprit, and she has seen an improvement in her daughter's physical and mental health since Megan has begun treatment for heavy metal toxicity.
I'm very proud to live in Illinois. I feel like we've done a lot here to reduce mercury exposure. But having the Illinois Department of Public Health and the Illinois chapter of the APP come in and say that they're going to plan an exemption before this bill was even signed into law is just crazy.
Conrick is referring to a meeting between the IDPH and the Illinois chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, ICAAP. According to the minutes of the June 29, 2005 meeting, a staff member, Shannon Perry Limjuko, gave an update on HB 511, the Illinois mercury bill. She told how, despite ICAAP's opposition to the bill, it passed quickly through the House. Quote, "When the bill was in the Senate, ICAAP realized the bill was going to pass in some form and worked with the bill's proponents to mitigate the negative effects of this bill as much as possible. ICAAP has been able to prevent a provision which would have required physicians to distribute a written form about the thimerosal to all patients at the time of vaccination. ICAAP was also able to ensure that an exemption clause was included in the bill, which would allow the IDPH to bypass this law if an emergency arises such as an outbreak or shortage of a vaccine supply. If this law would prove prohibitively costly to IDPH, this could also be considered an emergency, which could warrant an exemption, end quote. Then Karen McMahon of the IDPH added, quote, that the IDPH will need to develop and issue an exemption almost immediately after this bill is signed in preparation for the upcoming influenza season, end quote. Indeed, it is the influenza vaccine that most alarms those who question the exemption. Although a thimerosal-free version exists, the lower-cost multiple-dose vial contains 25 micrograms of mercury per dose. Dr. David Ayoub, assistant professor of Southern Illinois University School of Medicine and medical director of Prairie Collaborative, an immunization watchdog organization in Springfield, says the mercury contained in one dose of the flu vaccine exceeds both the EPA's and the CDC's adult toxicity limits for organic mercury exposure and could be considered a toxic waste.
For mercury level to be defined as toxic waste level, that's 200 parts per billion. What's contained in a mercury vaccine vial is 50,000 parts per billion. So if you were to drop a vaccine vial, you would have to call hazmat. I mean, that's a toxic hazard. And we're injecting toxic waste levels of mercury into people. And that's unimaginable.
David Cavallo, Deputy Director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, says IDPH is committed to moving in the direction of preservative-free vaccines because there is a perception on the part of the public that mercury in vaccines is unsafe. However, he says,
there is no scientific basis for being concerned about thimerosal preservative in vaccines.
Laura Cellini, the mother of a recovering autistic child, disagrees.
He should probably go do his homework because there's a lot of scientific evidence, and we discussed this when we were working the bill.
Cellini's son, Jonathan, was diagnosed with autism at the age of 2 after he suddenly regressed when he was about a year and a half old. Her experience and research convinced Cellini that her son's symptoms that included an impaired immune system and temper tantrums were signs of mercury poisoning.
If we find it coming out of coal-burning power plants, it's a neurotoxin. If we find it in our fish or drinking water, it's a neurotoxin. If we find it in a thermometer, it's a neurotoxin. Just because you now take it and put it in a vaccine does not mean that it is no longer a neurotoxic substance.
IDPH's Cavallo is quick to point out that the mercury found in the environment and ingested is methylmercury, a different form of the liquid metal than ethylmercury found in thimerosal. He says it's not fair to use EPA's limit, which is 0.1 micrograms of methylmercury per kilogram of body weight per day, as the toxicity measure for both kinds of mercury.
And if the argument that mathematical argument you made that when you do that calculation and you compare it to EPA standards indicated that EPA standards would be violated, then the EPA would have banned the vaccine, and they haven't. So I don't think that's a valid argument.
Yet the EPA standards are indeed cited by other government agencies for measuring safe doses of ethyl mercury. According to the May 2003 report by the House Subcommittee on Government Reform, chaired by Congressman Dan Burton, Republican from Indiana, the Institute of Medicine and the FDA have stated that, quote, in the absence of a specific standard for ethyl mercury, the limits for ingested methylmercury should be used for injected ethylmercury, end quote. By these measures, Dr. David Ayoub says that an adult who weighs about 150 pounds would receive about 3.5 times the EPA's daily limit of organic mercury in just one dose of the flu shot.
A child who gets it is going to be, if my calculations, between 11 and 16 times what the EPA is considered safe. A fetus is going to get several hundred times what the EPA considers safe. I mean, the fetus is going to get the largest dose of mercury than anybody in Illinois. I mean, that's clearly the most vulnerable citizen.
A recent study suggests that ethyl mercury may be even more harmful than methylmercury. Professor Tom Burbacher of the University of Washington's Department of Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences compared the two kinds of mercury by injecting macaque monkeys with thimerosal at the rate experienced by young children, while feeding methylmercury to another group of monkeys at the same rate through their food. He found that although the blood levels of injected ethylmercury dropped faster than the blood levels of ingested methylmercury, ethylmercury had the potential to stay in the brain and cause damage.
Once the mercury gets into your brain, it actually can be transferred into another chemical form, into inorganic mercury. And inorganic mercury actually stays in the brain for a lot longer than organic mercury does. And there have been studies that show that inorganic mercury in primates, which is what we use for our study, our previous studies have indicated that inorganic mercury could also cause a neuroinflammatory response in the brain.
In fact, Burbacher says the inorganic mercury level in the brain was probably twice as high in the monkeys who received thimerosal than the monkeys who ingested methylmercury.
It wasn't peculiar to one animal or two. I mean, it was a group response.
Burbacher's study, which was commissioned by the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, provides basic information about where thimerosal goes when injected into the body. Next, they will be studying its effect on the brain and behavior of the monkeys. But Burbacher and others wonder, why wasn't this research done before thimerosal was added to vaccines?
I was very shocked to find that there really was never any safety data in humans with regard to thimerosal safety and efficacy prior to the time that was put on the market.
Lynn Redwood, a registered nurse and president of the Coalition for Safe Minds, testified before a congressional committee on September 8, 2004. Her statement included thimerosal's questionable history.
There was one study that I found, and this was back in the 1920s by the gentleman, I think his name was Koresh, Morris Koresh, who developed thimerosal. And you have to remember that early in the early 1900s, we did not have antibiotics at the time. So the medical community was desperate for anything to treat infections. And there was a group of patients over, I think, about a two-year period of time suffering from a very severe form of bacterial meningitis. And they were given thimerosal as a possible treatment. Now, what they found is that the people who received thimerosal did not have an acute, like, anaphylactic reaction. So based on that one study, they said that it was safe. But there was the patients in that study, a majority of them died from the infection. And if you go back and read the actual study, the authors even say that additional research needs to be done to prove that it wasn't toxic to the patients, that toxicity tests should be done, and those were never done.
Other accounts of this study, done on 22 patients suffering from meningitis, report that all the patients given thimerosal died within weeks of being injected. The deaths were not reported in the study done by Eli Lilly, the developer of thimerosal. Redwood says thimerosal's use in many over-the-counter products, from contact lens solutions to antiseptic salves, was phased out in the 1980s due to safety concerns, yet continued to be used in vaccines. Illinois' attempt to phase out mercury preservatives in vaccines has caught the eye of many advocates across the country. Laura Cellini says she has received calls from New Jersey to Hawaii from those seeking similar legislation in their state. According to the website nomercury.org, four states, California, Iowa, Missouri, and New York, have also passed legislation that limits mercury in vaccines administered to young children and pregnant women. Delaware's law is awaiting the governor's signature, and 14 states have introduced similar legislation. Unfortunately, all the laws exempt the flu vaccine. Cellini says hearing about IDPH's exemption made her frustrated.
Basically, I found it just very disrespectful of the process. You know, we have a legislative democratic process in place in this country, and that's what we went through to get this law. And the fact that the Department of Public Health stated that they don't agree with it, so therefore they're going to exempt it. That's not the same as what the provision exemption that was placed in the bill says. If you have anticipate a pandemic, an epidemic, a bioterrorism threat, if you have a shortage of supply, these are reasonable exceptions to grant an exemption. But the idea that you're going to say, we're going to grant an exemption because we don't agree with the work or the determination of the General Assembly or the governor of the state, I find to be very disrespectful of the process and the players.
Senator Don Harmon of Oak Park, a key sponsor of the law, admits that it allows the IDPH to declare exemptions, but said he was disappointed to see the department had granted an exemption so quickly.
We put the provision in there purposefully to avoid a situation where there was a risk of an epidemic or a shortage of available vaccines. But it's not clear to me that there was a shortage of the Marisol-free vaccine this year, and it's certainly of greater concern to me that the exemption appears to run through the calendar year, including when doctors and medical providers are ordering their vaccines for next year.
David Cavallo of the IDPH agrees that there are enough infant doses of thimerosal-free flu vaccine, but says that children 3 and older receive the adult vaccine, which would have been too expensive for the state to buy.
The difference for us is the difference between the 60,000 doses that we were allocated by the federal government at zero cost and 60,000 doses at full cost, which is if we were to purchase outside of the federal program. I believe the cost, full cost for preservative-free vaccine is between $12 and $14. So if we were to purchase 60,000 doses at full cost to replace the vaccines that we're getting for free, it would cost between $720,000 and $840,000.
Barbara Malarkey is president of the Illinois Vaccine Awareness Coalition. She believes that IDPH has the responsibility to inform citizens that the vaccines they are about to receive exceed the state's mercury limit.
I think they have a responsibility, even though it was not in the law. What is the mission of the Illinois Department of Public Health? I thought it was to protect the public. I really would like to see every physician or nurse or pharmacist who's injecting people with these vaccines to give the people, whether it be parents or adults, the package insert of the particular vaccine that the person is thinking of getting. Because then that person could go and copy it, because the package inserts are usually on tissue paper with minute printing. But they could have a chance then to read this enlarged copy and decide if they, in fact, do want to put this into their body or their child's body.
Senator Harmon says he may consider more restrictive legislation if the exemptions continue.
I hope not, but I'm certainly willing to consider that alternative if we don't get the sort of cooperation from the department that I hope we will get.
Meanwhile, the beginning of what would have been a huge study to see if the cases of autism decrease with the absence of mercury in vaccines has now been delayed for at least another year. From the trenches, I'm Rita Sand.